Krishna. Welcome back, everybody. Happy to be with you, Madan Sundarji, again.
Hare Krishna.
We are on text 12, Observing the Armies on the Battlefield of Kurukshetra, chapter 1. So I will chant the verse. Tasya Sanjanayan Harsham Puruvriddha Pitamaha Simhanadam Vinadyochaihi Shankham Dadmo Pratapavan. Now, the stage is set for something grand to happen. So Duryodhana has seen the army, panic mode, goes back to and fro, goes to his teacher, goes to the grandfather, goes to all the best of warriors which he has surrounded himself with. Now Bhishmadev takes action. Then Bhishma, the great valiant grandsire of the Kuru dynasty, the grandfather of the fighters, blew his conch shell very loudly, making a sound like the roar of a lion, giving Duryodhan joy. So I thought at this particular point of time, Bhishmadev is not going to again come back in a much more grander way in the Bhagavad Gita. But he is such a major player of all that is to happen. So just a very brief background about Bhishmadev. The story is about Ganga Devi and one king called Mahabhish. In a particular area of the celestial planets, Ganga's upper garment was kind of taken away by Vayu. And immediately, all the other personalities just turned away. But Ganga also didn't do anything to cover herself up properly. And this Mahabhish king was just enthralled upon seeing Ganga's beauty. And they both were told that this is so unbecoming of you. This behavior doesn't suit here. Both of you go down to the earthly planet. So she came as Ganga. Mahabhish became King Shantanu. And as she was preparing, she was very apologetic. She says, no, please, I'm sorry. I don't know what happened. 8 sages came and said that, Mother, we are all cursed to take birth in this lower planet called Earth. But frankly, we made some mistake. But we are apologetic. We just want to come back and resume our meditation here. And she said, well, what do I do? Would you like to beget us as your children? But do one thing, as soon as we are born, just cast us into your waters and we should come back immediately. We don't want to stay there. From this, we can understand how some celestials view us. living on this planet, we say, wow, such grand hills and valleys and oceans and rivers and 5G, super 5G plus technology and man conquering space and blah, blah, blah. But this is the reality from the Mahabharata's point of view. So Mahabhish becomes Shantanu. He is having a son whose name is Devavrata. And he sees this beautiful maiden strolling on the banks of the Ganga. And smitten by her, he doesn't know that there is this previous connection. So he says, please be my queen. I'll make you my chief queen, our progeny will rule. She said, King, you don't know who I am, and I have certain conditions. And before even she could say what conditions, he said, agree, don't worry. I am the king, I can do anything for you. You cannot question my actions. Now, I think that also many of our viewers may sympathize. They have also said something like that to their spouses. That don't worry, whatever you say, I will do. So they get married. After a year or a year and a half, the first child is born. It's a son. King is very happy. To his amazement, as soon as the child is born, the queen starts walking outside the palace, comes out of the palace, goes far away, crosses forests and villages and hills and comes to the Ganga and throws the newborn baby saying, this will be good for you. The king doesn't say a word of protest. And after that, life is normal. He was thinking whether she has some kind of phobia or mania. What exactly? Is she right? Should I take her to a shrink or whatever? Second child, third child, fourth child, sixth child, seventh child is thrown and the king, eighth child is about to be thrown and the king cannot control himself. Says, stop, you wretched woman. You killed my seven sons. Now you're trying to kill the eighth one also. And who gave you the right? And blah, 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 blah. And blasts her like anything. She said, you forgot your promise. I said, hell with my promise. And then she says that, I'm Ganga. You were Mahabish. These were the Vasus. And there is one Vasu whose name was Dyu in that particular life. He's supposed to stay here for a very long time. So, King, please allow me to take... I'm sorry. Did I say that he had a son? No, he didn't. He didn't have a son. This is the eighth son is that Dyu Vasu. He says, I will take him. I'll train him up in weapons and I'll give him back. So for 10 or so long years, Shantanu is alone. Not a day passes without him remembering his wife. And one day he comes there. And every day now and then he would come to the banks of the Ganga just to reminisce the past experiences. And he sees a young boy, 10, 12 years old, and he's stopping the flow of the mighty Ganga with his bare arms. And he looked at him, his so shining face, such a shining face, handsome, strong. And then to his amazement, Ganga comes there. He remembers her, please come back, please come back. She said, no, that role is over. I cannot come back. But your husband, I've come to give you your son. He will make your name shine like anything. So people call him Ganga Putra and Devavrata. And after some years, he finds that his father is in a sullen mood. He asks the charioteer, where did my father go? So he talked of a fisherman's village where Shantanu saw a maiden and thought that maybe she should be his wife. But the fisherman king, the chief, said that, no, no, no. This king may marry her, but then he will treat her like a maid servant. And here Devavrata says that, is that so? I'll go on his behalf and ask her hand. The chief says the same thing, that, you know, you are the prince regent, you will become the king. And after that, what would this progeny of my daughter do? I promise you, her son will be the rulers of Hastinapur. All right. But what about your marriage? Your children may not agree with this agreement. So raising his arms, he says, I vow today I will never marry forever. As long as I live, I will support, protect the integrity of this kingdom and the throne. And due to this terrible vow, Bhishma, that's what the demigod said, and they showered flowers upon him. Thus begins the career of our grand Bhishma Dev. And then Chitrangada and Pandu are born. Chitrangada dies after fighting with a Gandharva. Pandu is cursed. He retires to the forest. Sorry, Vichitravirya and Chitrangada are born. Chitrangada dies while fighting with a Gandharva. And Pandu retires to the forest. There, asking his wife for progeny from the celestial demigods. She said, no, this could be Adharma. This is a very nice point I heard recently. Pandu says, I may be cursed, but my mentality, my mind is pure, I can assure you. And I think you are also pure in mind. Let us invoke Dharmaraj first. If he agrees, only then we will proceed. Otherwise, if Dharma himself doesn't come and become your son, then no questions asked. Very nice, isn't it? Like, although they are assured, like people should say that, no, my mind is pure. Today also people may say, my mind is pure. I'm not guilty at all. Today's politicians may lie through their teeth and say that I'm not guilty. But this is not the case. They actually empirically tested it. That let us invoke Dharmaraj, Yamaraj. So Yudhishthira is born, then Indra for Arjun, Vayu for Bhima, and the Ashwini Kumar, the twins, they are born from Madri. So the five Pandavas born there. As soon as Yudhishthira is born, Gandhari, in a fit of rage and disappointment, strikes her abdomen, and all that comes out is a lump of flesh. So Vyasdev, knowing the whole thing, cuts it into 101 parts, and there are 100 Kauravas, and their Dushala, their sister. But one thing has happened. Dhritarashtra is born blind, so he cannot become king. And Pandu is dead, so his son can become king. So technically, Yudhishthira is supposed to be the king. But Dhritarashtra cannot just come to that stage of acceptance. I will briefly pause here. People say that if you just accept sometimes things in life, life could be much less complicated. Would you agree or would like to say something on this?
Yeah, I mean, that's what it's all about. Then people raise question about, is everything is destiny then?
Correct.
I mean, it's like, supposed...
one pole or the other pole. Either I do everything or I do nothing. Somebody else will be blamed. Yeah, I think this also we will revisit and revisit again and again. As to the Gita kind of teaches you, this is your job, pick it up. This is not your job, shut up. So when to speak, when not to speak. When to talk, when not to talk. When to wield arms, when not to wield arms. When to have non-violence, when to have full violence. I mean, these are all important topics, and it is easy to fall in the compartment of just yay or nay, yes or no. Yeah, nicely put it, that life could be much more less complicated.
I mean, today's people find it more difficult to understand this because somehow our mind works a lot in a binary format where they want, tell me one thing, don't make it complicated.
It's a digital world, isn't it? 1-0.
So we have really become digitized. So somewhere we fail to see there is a lot of reality existing between 1 and 0 and beyond 1 and 0 also. But actually, as you said, when to pick up a weapon, when not to pick up a weapon. It is highly circumstantial. But people say, no, you tell me no weapon is no weapon. We had a great sage in India who said non-violence on the name of Bhagavad Gita. So non-violence. So like that, it goes on. So that's where it becomes very difficult. I mean, I have my own personal life experience, where I kind of making this point for where we read other literatures. We say, oh, so simple. You know, some basic tenets are given. Just follow this. Nothing to worry about it. Well, when it comes to Bhagavad Gita, it's just like every movement, what decisions you make, accordingly, your destiny is created.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a profound subject matter. I mean, I'm held accountable to whatever choices I make. Whereas the other literatures talk about you make a choice, just make one choice, which is predestined and predefined for you. And after that, whatever choices you make is irrelevant because you have made one choice. So they kind of put it into very simplest format. But life doesn't work like that.
Correct.
So, yeah.
So continuing our understanding of Bhishma Dev's personality, so he's now he's worrying about how do I train up these five valiant princes who have come from the forest with their widowed mother and the 100 Kauravas with their blind father. Gandhari doesn't do much of any talking or whatever. She's a very powerful lady. And she would burst into action just at the very end of the Mahabharata. Otherwise, she just accepting that my husband is blind, I need to be his support system. And she also puts a blindfold over her eyes. So it's a very interesting thing when the Kauravas Pandavas playing in the forest, they drop their ball in a well. And they're all nonplussed as to how to take it out. And Acharya Drona happens to be passing by. And he says, well, you are the young princess of the Kaurava dynasty. And I thought the Kurus are quite advanced in archery. And they say, oh, if you talk so nicely, why don't you bring it out yourself? So he took one straw and then threw it with such dexterity that it stuck to the ball. Another one, then he just pulled it out. And they came back home saying, Pitama, we found a very wonderful teacher. So Drona becomes the teacher of the 105 princess. And Bhishmadev is kind of relieved that, oh, there is somebody who can teach them proper Kshatriya Dharma. Till we see today, where upon the goading and the forcing of his grandson, he has been forced, dragged practically in this war. And Bhishmadev had natural compassion for Duryodhan. It's not like he hated him. He just didn't approve of his actions. But then he had his commitment. I will protect the throne. I'll protect the occupier of the throne. I'll support the occupier of the throne. And this is again, we will take it up later when mindsets, like fixed mindset, does it help you all the time? This is my vow. This is my austerity, my penances. I do it. I do it for the world's good. But hey, if you would have given it up, things would have been much better. So these are also how deeply you should be attached to your own spiritual practices, even not the main ones, but the peripheral ones, the tertiary ones. Or is spirituality one monolithic thing? I don't think it is one monolithic thing. There are various threads coming out, dietary rules, sleeping rules, resting rules, getting up rules, health rules, etiquette rules, communication. So much is there, and we cannot have this monolithic thing, which Bhishmadev had, that even if a nalayak person sits on the throne, I'll support him. So the Mahabharata says, why? And especially a powerful person like you, you should not be taking these vows. So friends, these are the tough questions which Mahabharata asks, and Gita also. Actually, Mahabharata asks, Gita answers. I'll put it like that. So here there is a lot of symbolism. He blowing his conch shell like a lion. So he's informing his depressed grandson that, hey buddy, there is no chance of victory. That is Bhishmadeva's signal. Because Krishna was on the other side. But then it's my duty to conduct the fight. Don't worry, I won't be sparing any pain. Pain is not a word in Bhishma's dictionary. He's not afraid of death even. He can only die when he wants to. Such a resourceful person. So in one sense, our Acharya described, Bhishma didn't say anything, but this is what he meant. Despite your heroic words, victory or defeat lies in the Lord's hands. I will do my duty. Lay down my life for your sake, O Duryodhan. But I feel that's not enough to guarantee your victory. So the conch shell also, friends, you should remember, is in the hands of Vishnu, Shankha, Chakra, Gada, Padma. The four symbols of Lord Vishnu Murti, which he carries. He carries a conch shell, carries a lotus flower, he carries a mace, and he carries a Sudarshan Chakra, or the disc. This again indicates that Duryodhan had no chance of victory, because the origin of Vishnu is present on the opposite side.
Oh, interesting point. Yeah, never.
So that's all from me. Unless you want to add anything, we can wrap up this episode.
I mean, you brought about many, many points, Proji, about when you discussed about the story of Bhishma Pitama, and you made a very nice point about that how Mahabharata raises a question and Bhagavad Gita answers. So the story that you just narrated actually simultaneously brings forward many, many questions, which we would take it forward when we read Bhagavad Gita. In other words,
yes.
I just want to tell our readers, I know some of you might be thinking many things, so why this happened and that happened. So don't worry about it. We just have kind of given a little bit of pep talk about Bhishma Pitama's contribution and Bhishma Pitama's life. But what all happened beginning from Shantanu's attraction to the fisherman's daughter, Satyavati, if I'm correct, right? All that, what led to Mahabharata war? It raises many questions, as Prabhuji said very nicely, that Bhagavad Gita answers. We will be going back to the story again at different times, and we'll be trying to learn some lessons for ourselves what it is. So, as Prabhuji just concluded, so here now Bhishma, without saying any word, he blows a conch shell. He's saying, well, I have to do my duty. I'll do my duty. I'll perform my Kshatriya Dharma. Don't be afraid about it. And let the will of Lord prevail. And let's see what the will of the Lord. That's the follow-up verse is going to speak about.
Yes. Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Thank you, everyone.